Welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Highfill, a reporter and wine columnist with the Record newspaper and recordnet.com in Stockton, California. I'm a certified specialist of wine and level 3 certified with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. I hope you enjoy this podcast, which focuses on the growers and vintners and winery principals in the Lodi American viticultural area. Please join the From the Vine Facebook group page. That's facebook.com/groups/FTV209. And for archived columns and FTV podcasts, check out recordnet.com/FTV. And welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Highfill, and what a pleasure it is to be at Bokish Vineyards in Lodi with owner, grower Marcus Bokish and his esteemed, charming, and wonderfully talented winemaker, Elise Perry. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Bob.
It's always great to be here, but it's really exciting to be talking about what we're going to talk about today, and that is the Gran Reserva, which is, as we're taping this, is about to be released. In fact, tomorrow there's a release party here at Bokish, so by the time people hear this, that'll be over, but this is a real exciting project that you all have undertaken. So this is Gran Reserva. This is a Tempranillo that's been aged 5 years per Spanish law. That's what makes a Gran Reserva a Gran Reserva, but I tried it last night, and it's just a spectacular wine, Marcus. How did this whole idea kind of come together?
Well, we started our winery in the year 2000, so now we're coming on 20 years of being a winery. And the concept of the Gran Reserva started very early on. But we never were able to really realize that dream because we didn't have our own facility until 2014. So for 2014, it was an absolute pipe dream. But when we finally were able to have our own bricks and mortar facility located here in Eastern Lodi on Atkins Road, we thought this is the time to be able to start the Gran Reserva. And one of the reasons why we couldn't do it beforehand is because when you're a custom crush facility, which is essentially when you're making your wines in somebody else's winery, holding wines for up to 5 years plus is something that's pretty onerous for the owners and also pretty risky for us, because we want to make sure that we have a winery that has full control of the barrels and making sure that no infection by any kind of microbial action can occur. So when we have our own facility, then we can control that very tightly. And in a Gran Reserva, Elise can talk to this, but it's even more important to maybe be on top of your barrels and have a great barrel program. So in 2014, we gave it a go, and making a Gran Reserva is making essentially the best wines that can be made in Spain. As you said, it has to be a minimum of 5 years of aging, and a minimum of 2 years of those 5 years have to be in barrel. So in 2014, when Elise came on board, she got really excited about this as well. We had our own facility, and so we started our project. And now, after all these years, we're releasing our very first Gran Reserva.
Fantastic. Elise, can you tell us what those conversations were like when you came on board and then the idea of Gran Reserva? What do you remember those conversations and what you all discussed?
Yeah, I think, you know, Marcus brought it to me and said, hey, you know, I'd like to, Liz and I have been dreaming about doing this. We finally are building this winery. And I was part of that process of helping to, you know, coordinate the construction. And of course that happened right as we're going into harvest, which made it even more challenging talking about a Gran Reserva. And of course we wanted to start it off right. And, you know, not every vintage is going to be a Gran Reserva. But 2014 was looking like a really exceptional vintage. And so when, you know, Marcus came to me and said, hey, I'd like to do this. What do you think? Of course I was excited. The opportunity to be able to have a wine that aging it for that long, both in barrel and bottle, because I was familiar with the Gran Reservas in Spain and knowing that no one really here in the States has done that. That was pretty cool to think about doing as a winemaker. Mm-hmm. And to just be able to see that, you know, taste the wine and as it's aging and really kind of shepherd through the process with a lot of love. I mean, it takes a lot of love and caring. And so, yeah, it's pretty neat to be able to do something this unique, and especially here in Lodi.
Right. Marcus, what does it kind of speak to you? Because your heritage is, Iberian Peninsula, Spain particularly. And
yeah.
This is like the granddaddy of Spanish red wines, is Gran Reserva. So I wonder emotionally and just the connection that this wine has to you.
Yeah, yeah. So growing up, you know, on special occasions, we'd always have bottles of Gran Reserva on the desk or on the table when we were living in Spain every summer. And so when it was someone's saint's day or something like that, then the bottles with these little silver foils would come out. And it was just a very, very special occasion. And it caught my eye. And we all got to try the wines and ooh and all about them. And so as I later on in life, when Liz and I moved to Spain and we were working in the Spanish wine business, you know, again, we just thought, gosh, these are phenomenal wines. Now, why are they so phenomenal? Just because they've been aged for so long? Well, no, it's because they're almost entirely based on the Tempranillo grape. And those people who have tasted Gran Reserva or have tasted California Tempranillos and had the discipline to stick them in their cellar and not pop them open right away.
Very hard.
Yeah, very hard. We'll see that Tempranillo is just ideally suited to Gran Reserva because of its tannic structure, its ageability, its acidity. It's just everything comes together in a Tempranillo for aging. You can't have a Gran Reserva based on Grenache. You can't have a Gran Reserva based on white wines. But you sure can with Tempranillo. Mm. So, our love of Tempranillo, our love of Spanish wines, it just was a natural progression to be able to do this. Also, one of the things that we realize is that in Spain, most people, although they have a lot of second homes out in the country and they go every weekend to have a paella with their friends, they live and work in the cities and they live in small apartments and they have no place to age wines in a grand cellar. So the wineries do it for them. So that's why the wineries have created this whole law that says to call a wine a reserva, it has to be a minimum of 3 years before it hits the market. A Gran Reserva, 5 years. Mm-hmm. So people in Spain are really accustomed to buying older vintages, knowing that they're going to be just that much better. Mm-hmm. And so we in America think a little differently. We think, oh, is it past its point? So there's a big educational curve that we're going to have to do here, but we're prepared to do that because we just love Spanish wines. We love what we're doing.
Yeah. And there's Joven and Crianza.
That's Crianza. Right.
And those are shorter aged or released without as much age before they're released.
That's right. A vino joven, which means young. A young wine is released almost immediately. Mm-hmm. It sees no oak. Crianza has to be a minimum of, I think, 1 year of age, and it has to see some oak, I think maybe 6 months or so. And then you have the Reserva, which has to be a minimum of 3 years in the winery, mm-hmm. prior to release. And one of those years at a minimum has to be in oak barrels. And then you have the granddaddy of them all, the Gran Reserva. Now, some wineries in Spain won't release their Gran Reserva until they believe it's ready. And that could be more than 5 years. They could release them 8, 10, 15 years later. Mm-hmm. Wow. So
this is a culmination of a dream at least 20 years in the making.
Yes.
So this has to feel really good.
It feels really good. And I have to say something about Elise, because it wasn't like Elise was flying blind with this concept, because Elise had been making Tempranillo wines way before she came on board with us. So I think, you know, having a winemaker in California, mm-hmm. that had so much experience with Tempranillo,
right.
was like finding a needle in a haystack. And so we really lucked out.
Wow. And I think 90% of the world's Tempranillo is grown in the Iberian Peninsula, and it's the fourth largest, mm-hmm. or fourth most planted red grape in the world. So yes, to find someone in the United States, California, Lodi, or Bay Area, where you originated, New York really is where you originated. It's a fascinating story, and you're right, that is finding a needle in a haystack. That's really fortunate.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, and at least you can speak to this, but what vintages in the future do you think will make Gran Reserva quality at Bocage?
Yeah, well, I mentioned a little bit earlier that not every vintage is going to be a Gran Reserva. It just depends on the quality. And of course, we find that out when we get it into the winery and start fermenting. And pretty early on during fermentation, I know whether we're going to have something of Gran Reserva quality. And right now, it looks like the even years have been the years that have been really good. So we're just about to bottle our 2016 Gran Reserva. We'll be bottling that in April. It's right now, we're not sure what the next vintage is going to be. 2017, maybe 2018, most likely. 2018 has been a really outstanding vintage. And so it really is just about the concentration, the tannin structure of the wine. So so yeah, not every vintage is going to make it.
Yeah. Well, this is perfect because we can speak about the growing side of Tempranillo and then the winemaking side of Tempranillo. So Marcus, as a grower, we talk a lot about Lodi's kind of classic Mediterranean climate, so it's suitable to a lot of different varieties, Iberian Peninsula among them. As a grower, what is Tempranillo like to work with? It's an early ripening grape, isn't it?
Well, it's very interesting because it's called Tempranillo, which comes from temprano, which means early, and it certainly is early when compared to other Iberian varietals. But when you put it in the midst of Chardonnay and Merlot and Cab and French varietals and Italian varietals, it's not really that early. It's actually kind of mid to late. So the name is a bit of a misnomer. But it has a lot of names. Like, for example, in Catalonia, where we're from, they call it Eye of the Hare, Ull de Llebre. You know, in Madrid, they call it Tinto del País, or the red wine of the country. So it has probably more synonyms than any variety. The Portuguese call it Tinta Rouris, and they use it often in port production. So, but what's interesting also about Tempranillo is that if you look at its origin is actually in the Rioja, okay? So the Rioja is relatively high elevation right on the Ebro River that drains out into the Atlantic. And it sits in an area that's not very affected by the ocean. So while most of the Mediterranean has a Mediterranean climate, the Rioja is actually a high elevation variety, and that you need to respect. So one of the things that happens in high elevation varieties is you have a very big shift in daytime highs and nighttime colds. So you have what's called a very high diurnal fluctuation. And grapes that have been selected in over thousands of years in those areas tend not to hold on to their acidity very well when they're brought to lower elevations. And so you bring Tempranillo now to Lodi, and even though we get these cooling nights from the Delta breezes, we have one issue, and that is that we tend to pick red varieties too ripe in the United States. And if you do that with Tempranillo, given its history of where it was selected from in high elevation, then you get these really flabby wines with high pHs. So you have to be disciplined and do what the Spaniards do, and that is you don't pick at 24 to 26 Brix. You pick it closer, well, a little bit riper than that even. You pick it closer between 23 to 25 Brix, a little bit lower. You also pick it by pH. You really, really watch where that pH is going, because once it starts dropping its acid, it drops it fast. And also, to be able to get really good ripeness and what we call phenolic maturity, the best thing is to have lower yields so that you accumulate your sugars faster than you lose your acids. So lower yields really lead to some very, very fine Gran Reserva-like qualities that then later Elise can play with to do her magic.
Do you farm your Tempranillo with Gran Reserva in mind? In other words, a uniform kind of lower yield mentality going into all of your Tempranillo, or do you select blocks, or how do you kind of approach the Tempranillo program?
Well, we for all of our ultra premium programs, whether it be fruit that comes to Bocage or fruit that goes to other wineries, and we do supply a lot of wineries with Tempranillo, all our focus is ultra premium and therefore Gran Reserva potential. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to make a Gran Reserva, because it has to be exceptionally unique to make it, but we farm it all with the Gran Reserva potential. Secondly, we have what we call our sweet spots. So we have in every Tempranillo block an area that we know, and this is true of all varieties, we know where the flavor comes up faster, the seeds tend to brown a little earlier, you get that phenolic maturity, that pigmentation in the skin is at its maximum. So, and over the period of years, as you get to know the vineyard, you know where that quote-unquote sweet spot is, mm-hmm. and obviously we take our fruit from those sweet spots.
Right. And for this Gran Reserva, what vineyards is the fruit from, Elise?
It's from our La Cerezas vineyard, which is Marcus and Liz's backyard vineyard, and the original mother block for all of the Tempranillo that we grow, and also all the Albarino and Graciano that Bocas grows, and then the Liberty Oaks vineyard. And it's actually from two different AVAs within the Lodi Appalachian. So the La Cerezas vineyard is from McCalmie River, silty sandy soils, definitely a different profile than what we get from the Liberty Oaks vineyard, which is more clay, more volcanic clay. So Liberty Oaks tends to be a little bit darker fruit, a little earthier, whereas La Cerezas tends to almost have a little bit of a floral quality. Also tends to be a lot more tannic. So that's the one of the other challenges with Tempranillo is to make sure you're not over extracting those tannins, because it can become a real tannic beast if you're not careful. So but also making sure that you have enough tannin structure, especially for the Gran Reserva, so it can age.
And what I'm going to say micro AVA, because I was not corrected, but Marissa Lang was saying she doesn't like sub AVA, so I'm
right.
trying to get into micro AVA.
Okay.
Of Lodi, 7 micro AVAs. We have La Cerezas in the McCollumy River, mm-hmm. micro AVA. Where is Liberty Oaks?
Liberty Oaks is in Jehan.
Jehan. Oh, mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Right in Langtwin's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Right
yeah.
there. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
There is another aspect to, I think, why our Tempranillos are so rich, and that is that we personally selected the budwood from very well-pedigreed vineyards
excellent,
in Spain.
Excellent point, yeah.
And we brought that budwood over. Mm-hmm. So there had existed Tempranillo in California prior to our introductions, and a lot of them were selected for during the Prohibition era for quantity. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the more exceptional selections that were here in California had been lost. In fact, the earliest known selection that came to California was a Valdepeñas selection of Tempranillo that was planted in the Sierra foothills in 1868 to see whether that would be a good variety for the miners. And so Tempranillo has been around for a long time, but our selection comes from the Ribera del Duero, which is north central Spain, north of Madrid. And those cuttings had originally come from the Rioja. And it was an old vine Tempranillo block that we really liked. And when I was living and working in Spain, we brought selections from that vineyard over to Catalonia. And then later on, that collection I imported here to California.
Yeah. And you were instrumental in so many things, Iberian Peninsula varieties coming here, but also in establishing those micro AVAs. So, yeah, we talked about that, I think, on the last podcast we did together last year.
Yeah, I think it's really funny, in particular with the McCollumie River AVA, which, for those who don't know this is the original footprint of Lodi's vineyards. All the old vine zins, or I'd say probably about 95% of them, are located within the McCollumie River AVA. And so it's funny that our mother block of importation ended up there too. So, and our neighbors who farm German varietals. So you have some of the oldest of Lodi's traditions next to some of the newest of Lodi's traditions. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Love it. From a winemaker's perspective, how challenging is Tempranillo? Is it an easy wine to make compared to others, or is it a little more?
It is a little bit more challenging. Well, number one, because of the pH. Because mm-hmm. as much as we really try, we're monitoring the sugars weekly, and I'm out in the vineyard sampling and tasting and checking the Brix levels. And of course, as Marcus said, we start looking at pH at a certain point. And we're usually pretty successful, but pHs tend to be high. So the real challenge there is just making sure we've got the right pH levels and acidity, but then not getting too crazy that if the pH is a little bit high, it's all about how it's tasting as well. Mm-hmm. So not over acidifying if you know, the pH is too high, because then you're going to completely, you know, take away from the flavors of the wine. So it's not really that temperamental, okay, a grape to work with in the fermenters, unlike Graciano, which tends to be temperamental both in fermentation and in aging. Yeah, I always say it's like a teenager. But Tempranillo definitely, it's not quite as temperamental. And one thing that I do with the Tempranillo is we ferment it in tank, and so doing pump overs. But after primary fermentation, I do an extended maceration. So typically it's in tank for an extra 2 weeks or so, just depending, and I'm tasting it every day just to make sure we haven't gone too far. So that's the other thing that we're doing with our Tempranillo.
And how long in tank did it last, this 2014, or how long was it in tank? Well, I'm stretching your...
You're stretching my memory a little bit, but typically typically it's in tank because we do a cold soak. So typically, from the time it gets crushed into tank and it's finished with primary fermentation is usually about 10 days. The other thing about the Tempranillo is, unlike other varieties, it does... as it starts fermentation, it can rocket through fermentation if you don't control the temperature. So that definitely is one of the one of the things that is have to be really careful with, because when I was first making Tempranillo for myself years ago, and I was just making very small quantities in tea bins, I could have the bricks at 20 bricks one day, and it was just starting fermentation, and I would go into the winery the next morning and it was at 5 bricks.
Wow.
And the temperature was 92 degrees. So it's really nice having the ability to put the Tempranillo in tank and being able to really control that temperature so that it doesn't get too high. So we can have a slower, more controlled fermentation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was also with native fermentations, it rocked.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, without even any yeast additions.
Without an inoculation.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, since oak is such a key component to mm-hmm. Gran Reserva, what is the oak regimen for the 2014?
So it's 100% new oak, and it's a combination of French, American, and Hungarian. I'm a big fan of Hungarian on Tempranillo, and it through the aging process, it really seems to just really lift the wines. And that's one of the things we're also careful about is our barrel selection, the right coopers, the right toast levels, because we're not looking for the oak to overpower.
Right.
Although this is 100% new oak, so you will get some of mm-hmm. that oak characteristic, but as it ages, that's really going to temper and integrate really well. So we're seeing that as we've opened bottles, right, you know, after we bottled and kind of tasting to see where it's at, seeing that oak mellow, but not getting, you know, too much American oak because, you know, all that vanilla characteristic. And so really just trying to be careful and very specific. We're also using puncheons, so larger format on the Tempranillo.
Larger format meaning larger barrels?
Larger barrels. Okay. So puncheons, the puncheons that we have are 132 gallons, okay, whereas a standard barrel is 60 gallons. So that larger format.
So more surface area and...
Right.
Yeah, in the larger format, you actually have less surface area to volume.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and one of the magical points of winemaking is that when you're going to put a wine into barrel for this long, all in new oak, then the winemaker has to taste the wines in its first 6 months, first year, understanding that it's not going to be tasting anything but over-oaked. But they have to be able to see beyond that, to see where this ship is going to land. And so it takes a lot of intuition, and Elise is very good at that.
Yeah. Well, I tasted the wine last night. I was provided a sample bottle, and I did take some notes. I'd like to share those with you and then get your thoughts on the wine, at least yours, from, you know, your perspective on it. But obviously the clarity is outstanding, very clear. The color of it, the core is so deep. It is so almost black when you're looking into the glass from over, mm-hmm. over it, looking straight down. And then it has this beautiful purple hue on the rim, you know. And I've read where Tempranillo is not considered a very aromatic red variety, but I must tell you, when I had it in the glass, it was about 6 to 8 inches away from my face, and I could really smell the aroma, some of those, they were just, it was just popping from the glass. And what I got was a lot of blackberry and dark cherry and dark plum, a lot of the dark fruit character. And then swirling it, I did pick up the oak, but it wasn't overpowering. It's just beautifully integrated. I agree with you. I think in time, the tannins in that oak will become a little more elegant. Right now, it's fresh, it's vibrant. It's just leaping from the glass, but in such a beautiful, pleasing way. And then the flavors, I'm a fan of tannic wines. I mean, I love Barolos, and I love tannic cabs and Tempranillos. And this certainly has that nice... and I want to be careful when I describe tannins, because it's such a sensory aspect for people, and everybody's different. But I don't know if grippy is the right word. I don't know if that gives off a negative connotation, because I don't mean it to be, but it's there. They're a little bit chalky, and I wonder if any of the soil could have contributed to that at this initial stage. I mean, it was... open for about an hour before I went in there. I got some of the telltale kind of cedar box and some of the tobacco, but mostly fruit. I mean, that was what really popped out at me, was just how fruit forward this wine was, especially aromatically. And I found the acid to be really pleasing and very cleansing. So I jotted down medium to medium plus on the acid. So I think you all control the pH really well on this, because I think you need that acid, and I like high acid wines, but it's not in any way, it's not even remotely flabby, it's not overweight, it is taut, and just really a beautiful intensity to the aroma and the flavor and the color. You know, I just think it's an outstanding wine, and I can't wait to get home tonight and have some more of it, and then lay some down and maybe go through it, on a year by year basis.
I keep telling people, aged Tempranillo, I think, can rival any aged, good aged cab. It really can. And so that's what's really cool here, is that we're aging it for the consumer. It's a 5-year-old wine. And like Marcus said, it does not taste like a 5-year-old wine. It really is just, it's bright, it's fresh. The color is even still deep and dark. And so that really shows you that it's going to age for a very long time.
Yeah. And with regard to the tannins, I would say that they are very well integrated. The oak and the fruit tannins are very well integrated, and they do have a little bit of that kind of dusty chalkiness that you would get out of like a very good Argentine Malbec, or let's say a Lemberger, or so it does have those similarities. So it doesn't overpower, and yet it gives you tremendous length. So yeah.
The finish is really long. I forgot to mention that. How pleasing that is. Wonderful. So congratulations. This is a triumph.
Thank you.
First Grand Reserva, to my knowledge, where at least Lodi, maybe California? Do we dare say that? Or how far do we want to take this?
We believe that there... we know that there has been a Grand Reserva made from someone who later became a very good friend of mine, the folks at Abicella Vineyards in Oregon, Southern Oregon. And we know that there's been some attempts at Grand Reservas here in California. So we may not be the first, but we're amongst a very small handful, and we hope that that this category will grow as people understand the potential of aged Tempranillos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we whet your appetite, only 300 cases were made. So that's not a lot. So no. I suggest you make haste and come to Bokish on Atkins Road, Eastern Lodi. We're in the Clements Hills Micro AVA.
Yes.
Okay. Or how else can people find this wine? Is it available online, or...
It will be available.
Online. Okay.
And in our tasting room.
Right.
And we'll see if some local restaurants want it. And so, like you said, we don't have a lot. So there won't be too much going out in distribution.
Right.
I believe we have two restaurants now that have an exclusive on it in this area.
Okay.
And, of course, being part of our wine club,
you
get onto the top of the list.
Okay. Wine club. And you can access that on wine. And is it BokishVineyards.com?
It's, yes, okay. BokishVineyards.com. And Bokish has a C in it, B-O-K-I-S-C-H, Vineyards.com.
Yeah, B-O-K-I-S-C-H, Vineyards.com. Very important. So, yeah. Great wine, another feather in Bokish's cap, your family's cap, but also for Lodi. I just think this really is a wine that's going to elevate and get a lot of attention from consumers and from writers. So awesome. Great job. What a great pleasure to have Marcus Bokish and Elise Perry with us here on the From the Vine podcast. You're the first two-time podcast
My goodness. Yes. Wow. Well, yeah. Thank you, Bob. So, that's an honor. I appreciate it.
I don't know about that. But thank you for being so generous with your time. And
of course.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next time.